The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Welcome to a Wednesday, everyone. Oh, boy. You know, I need to start taking those warnings of Mercury retrograde more seriously, because you know that I have gremlins. You know that my studio is infested with gremlins that come out, you know, just to play games with me. And wow, this time, and I'm not usually, you know, I mean, I like astrology. I get some of it. I think I'm a Scorpio. I have the characteristics. There are some things that ring true, but I don't, you know, I don't live my life by it. But oh my goodness, when they say Mercury is in retrograde and that wreaks havoc on communications and, you know, electronics and stuff, if judging by this past week, I'll say, yeah, it does. It definitely has an effect. And I think we're in it for another like week or 10 days. But let me just quick, I've got to vent because this is what I've been dealing with for the last 2 hours. As I've been trying to get the show set up, I've been dealing with my kid's phone. So Allison went out on her own and she got, for whatever reason, got a phone a few years ago through Boost Mobile, who was just horrible. And so to make a long story short, she was paying too much for shitty service. We have a good plan with T-Mobile, and I could put her on my plan. She'd save money every month, and it's a whole thing. So we did it. Called Boost to make sure we could do it, to get her account number, to port the number over. And they said, yeah, no problem. I said, when it's done, do I need to call you back to cancel the account? And they said, nope, once it's done, you're all good. Well, we go to do it today, and it won't take. And so we finally get someone on the phone who says, well, she hasn't had this line activated for 12 months, so we can't unlock the phone. She didn't sign any contract. These companies just get you over a barrel and you have no say. So right now her iPhone is a brick. And I'm fighting with Boost. So they're going to call me back after 6 o'clock so I can continue fighting with them. Isn't it fun? So I was doing that while I was getting the show set up. For some reason, I do not think we are on Facebook Live. I don't think it's working because I screwed everything up. Can I just go live now? I wonder if it will just let me do that. We'll see. I'll try to hit the go live button. But we are on YouTube. We are on Twitter. We are on Twitch. And we're on the Progressive. Oh, okay. And we're live. Okay, it is working. Hi, YouTube. Hi, Facebookers. Oh, you can't take me anywhere, I'll tell you. All right, so at least that's going. So we're firing on all cylinders. All right, I feel better about that now. All right, so here we are. What a day this has been. And sorry if I'm a bit scattered, but I'm a bit scattered. You know, this is what I get for trying to multitask. Anyway, so today was the day of the big summit between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin. My goodness, these so-called news channels, these cable news channels, they treat it like a sporting event. They wanted to turn this into the cage match of the century. You know, world leaders meet all the time. So anyway, that went on. I've got some clips from their press conferences, and we'll get to that in a moment. But there's other stuff going on. And I'm really bummed because I didn't have a chance to read through this whole thing. First of all, earlier today, I know I'm scattered and I'm sorry, and bear with me, please. And if anybody wants to call in, you can. Oh, let me tell you who's coming up today. You know, with all the shit we're learning about what happened in the, I hate to call it, Department of Justice under Trump, the Department of Injustice. I mean, we knew that the orange one wanted the attorney general to be his personal attorney, and that's not what the attorney general is. The attorney general is our attorney that represents the nation. But he had this Department of Justice doing his bidding. you know, getting phone records, not only from journalists, but also members of Congress. He sicked his Justice Department, and I hate to say his Justice Department because it's not his. He sicked the Justice Department on Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell. Gee, I wonder why. Because they are, because they were, you know, they were critical of him. Because Schiff was, you know, the lead impeachment manager in the first impeachment. And Eric Swalwell has been very outspoken. He was an impeachment manager in the second impeachment. But he got their phone records, including family members of theirs, including a child. We don't know whose that was yet, but I think we will. And journalists from CNN, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. It is reprehensible. And the shit that we're hearing that he implored the guy who came in after Bill Barr left, because, you know, that wasn't even, if it was too corrupt for Bill Barr to do, that's a pretty low bar, pardon the pun. It's just astounding. Just astounding. And then, why is this not working? I thought I pulled up the proposal. Joe Manchin put out a list of proposed changes for the For the People Act and the Voting Rights Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Again, I told you, technology is fucking with me right now. I have the page open and the document won't load. But Joe Manchin put out a list. Let me try it elsewhere. What the hell? Well, while I'm trying to load that, I'm just going to try to reload the page and see if that'll work. There's some days I should just get back in bed and it would be a lot more comfortable too. Maybe I'll try to pull it up on this computer because that one's frozen. I'm having one of those days, everybody, in case you're wondering. All right, so Joe Manchin proposed changes, S1. Okay, while that we try to get that up, let me tell you about another story that I didn't have time to fully read that's in The Intercept today. Because Lee Fong at The Intercept got some Zoom audio of Joe Manchin on a phone call hosted by No Labels. Now, No Labels is the group, ostensibly bipartisan group, co-founded by Joe Lieberman. That gives you an example of how bipartisan it is. And the way they describe No Labels in this Intercept article is it funnels high net worth donor money to conservative Democrats and moderate Republicans. That's about right. It's just stunning. They were on a Zoom call. I'm trying to figure out if they say when it was, but this article just posted to The Intercept a couple hours ago. It's by Lee Fong and Ryan Grimm, and it says Joe Manchin in a private call on Monday. Oh, it was Monday with a group of major donors provided a revealing look at his political approach to the most thorny issues confronting lawmakers. The remarks were given on this Zoom conference session that was obtained by the Intercept. The call included several billionaire investors and corporate executives, among them Louis Bacon, chief executive of Moore Capital Management, Kenneth Tuchman, founder of global outsourcing company Teletech, and Howard Marks, the head of Oak Tree Capital, one of the largest private equity firms in the country. So the Zoom participant log included a dial-in from Tudor Investment Corporation, a hedge fund founded by billionaire Paul Tudor Jones. Also on there, Republican consultant Ron Christie and Joe Lieberman, who now serves as a representative of No Labels and advises corporate interests. And the meeting was led by Nancy Jacobson, the other co-founder of No Labels. And let me just read to you a little bit of this because it's pretty astounding. The wide-ranging conversation went into depth on the fate of the filibuster, infrastructure negotiations and the failed effort to create a bipartisan commission to explore the January 6th storming of the U.S. Capitol. And it offers a frank glimpse into the thinking of the conservative Democrat who holds the party's fate in his hands. That would be Joe Manchin. So Joe Manchin told the participants on this call, the assembled donors, that he needed help flipping a handful of Republicans from no to yes on the January 6th commission in order to, and here's the key part, strip the, quote, far left of their best argument against the filibuster. So he's talking to these conservadems, these conservative donors, these Republicans, that you need to flip a handful of Republicans to overcome the filibuster on the January 6th commission in order to strip the, quote, far left of their best argument against the filibuster. The filibuster is a critical priority for the donors on the call as it bottles up progressive legislation that would hit their bottom lines. Oh, this is just stunning. By the way, I did reach out to Li Fong. I didn't hear back from him. I will keep checking to see if we do hear back from him because I'd love to get him on the line. If not today, you know, maybe we can talk to him later in the week about this call. Anyway, when it came to Senator Roy Blunt, a moderate, there's no such thing as a moderate Republican these days, a moderate Missouri Republican who voted no on the commission, Manchin offered a creative solution. Here's a quote. Roy Blunt is a good friend of mine, a great guy. Roy is retiring. If some of you all who might be working with Roy in his next life could tell him that it'd be nice and it'd help our country, that would be very good to get him to change his vote. And we're going to have another vote on this thing. That'll give me one more shot at it. Regarding Blunt, Manchin appears to be suggesting, without perhaps quite explicitly saying so, that the wealthy executives on the call could dangle future financial opportunities in front of the outgoing senator while lobbying him to change his vote. Senate ethics rules forbid future job negotiations if they create a conflict of interest or present even the appearance of a conflict of interest. Manchin notably doesn't suggest that the donors discuss a job, but rather says that the people who Blunt may later be working with would be likely to have significant influence reflective of the way future job prospects can shape the legislative process, even when unspoken. This article, can you hear where this is going? It is stunning. I will certainly post a link to it from the blog today where I post the show. That'll be at NicoleSandler.com/6-16-21, the day's date. But he continues. The article continues. The commission, Manchin tells No Labels, is important in its own right, necessary to determine how security failed and what former president dumbfuck role was in the riot, if any. But it's also critical to maintaining support for the filibuster. The January 6th commission got 56 votes, 4 short of the 60 it needed to overcome a filibuster, a thorough embarrassment for those like Manchin who claim bipartisanship is still possible in this ridiculously divided Senate chamber. And it goes on like that. I'm going to jump around a little bit because it's a lengthy article and I'm not going to have time to read the whole thing for you. But during the Zoom event, Manchin's Senate office appeared in the background. It's against campaign finance ethics rule to solicit funds while in a federal building. But Manchin did no solicitation beyond the broad suggestion that donors help out Republicans who switch their votes on the commission. But the group talked openly about how much money it planned to raise and how and on whom it would spend that cash. This is a real violation of ethics, I got to tell you. But again, we have no mode of holding members of Congress accountable, or the president for that matter, because we saw there's no way to enforce the a subpoena, a congressional subpoena. And obviously, there's no way to enforce these rules. So he goes on, Manchin's openness for filibuster reform on the call is notable, given it flew in the face of many attendees' hopes. Asked about a proposal to lower the threshold to beat back a filibuster to 55 votes, he said that it was something he was considering, but then quickly referred back to his earlier idea of forcing the minority to show up on the Senate floor in large enough numbers to maintain a filibuster. I don't understand what is up with this man. I do not get it. I don't understand anything about him. Anything about him. But this is what he does. And why can't I find this damn document? Hold on. You know what? I bet I have it saved here. Again, I'm all discombobulated because I had to do this. Okay, here it is. Because I no, that's not it either. Because I had to, you know, I was on the phone dealing with this crap. The gun rights case at the Supreme Court. And now I can't find it. I am going to find it though, because this is making me mad. Is this it? No, that's something else. All right, I'm going to keep looking. You know what? I'll find it when I'm playing clips. Hillary Clinton endorsement. Justice Department abandoned this lawsuit against John Bolton over his book about his time as former President Trump's national security advisor. The Trump administration sued Bolton last year, claiming the book disclosed classified information. Oh, okay. So the Merrick Garland Justice Department is not continuing Donald Trump's fight on this one. I guess that's a good thing. It just, none of this makes sense. We are so living in opposite world. You know, I'm looking at, it's like hell has frozen over. I'm looking at stuff that just makes no sense. All right, so we're going to get into this. And by the way, our guest today is friend of the show, Lisa Graves. Lisa Graves, among other things, she's the woman who, at her time at the Center for Media and Democracy, she spearheaded the investigation into the Koch brothers with Koch, I think it's Koch Unplugged or something, into Alec Exposed. All this stuff is Lisa Graves. But more importantly than that, she understands how the Justice Department works or how it's supposed to work because she was a deputy assistant attorney general. Yeah, she was under Bill Clinton. So, and she's worked on the, you know, Judiciary Committee as a legal expert and stuff. So I'm going to try to pick Lisa Graves' brain as to what the fuck is going on with the Department of Justice, or as I'm now calling it, the Department of Injustice. All right. I think David thinks I need help. He's calling in. Hello, darling.
Hi. I'll tell you what's up with Joe Manchin. He's a corrupt piece of garbage.
Yeah.
What he's talking about there is bribery. Bribery is a fucking crime.
That's
it doesn't
right.
matter what
yep.
you're doing in the halls of Congress or on a Zoom call or where you're doing it. It's fucking bribery. It's a crime. And his ass should be thrown in jail.
Yeah. Okay. But as I said, you know, I'm not going to this only applies to the Democrats right now because they're in charge and they're the ones who are having their subpoenas ignored and everything else they do, their oversight responsibilities ignored. And actually this, you know, Congress in the Constitution has oversight responsibilities of the executive branch, but no way to enforce that oversight. And so they're just like twisting in the wind. They say things and then the Republicans go, yeah, well, fuck you. We're going to do it this way anyway. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is here.
Well, they need a testicular implant.
Yeah, no
kidding. They have no balls.
Yeah.
They have no balls. They haven't had any balls for at least going back to 2000.
Yep.
When Obama was elected, I think it was a collective neutering of the party that took place then because Obama wanted everyone to love him.
Right.
And now Joe Manchin, he wants everyone to pay him. And Joe Biden has not gotten to the point where he's fed up with the whole thing enough to tell Joe Manchin to go fuck himself, which is what he should have done a long time ago.
Yeah, but the problem is, if you tell Joe Manchin to go fuck himself, he says, well, then fuck you. I'll take my toys and go across the aisle. And now Mitch McConnell is Senate Majority Leader.
That's fine. That's
no, it's fine. Not fine.
And what I'm saying is what should have happened a long time ago would be that Obama should have told Mitch McConnell that not a single federal dime
yeah.
will go to Kentucky
yep.
as long as he's pulling this shit.
Yep.
Not one.
Yep. I agree.
Not one. Because Obama was completely testicle free, never had them, never will. That's where all of this, that's the genesis of all of this bullshit.
I hear you. All right. All right. Well, it's a frustrating day all around. Without a doubt. Yeah. You know, and so, yeah. So I did find this document. Did you see this? The document that Joe Manchin put out, like his ransom demands for how to edit or manipulate the For the People Act to his liking so that it can pass.
Yeah.
And how to update the John Lewis Voting Rights Act as well. I'm sorry, Joe Manchin is not the heartbeat of America or the conscience of the Democratic Party. He's the guy who's holding us down, and now they're going to give in to his hostage demands? Although some of his things make sense, But I haven't had time because I've been in cell phone hell for the last few hours to go through it and figure out what's different from the For the People Act and his memo. But I guess that's, you know, it's on my docket of things to do.
Well, and where is Chucky Schmucky in all of this? Did he get drunk on Dirty Debbies and pass out?
I have no idea. No idea. I don't know. And
because he's a Senate majority leader, ostensibly.
Yeah.
He should certainly be doing something about this.
Should be. Right.
Exactly.
And why they don't work on shoring up Congress's oversight responsibilities and, you know, codifying them so they do have recourse when, you know, somebody like a John Bolton ignores a subpoena, that they can do something about it. Because now it's just toothless. There's no there.
No, absolutely not. There's no bite. It's all bark and no bite.
Yep. You know,
if they hauled one of these pricks into Congress in handcuffs and manacles, and leg irons rather, you'd be surprised how quickly all of a sudden these other jackasses would be responding to their fucking subpoenas.
Exactly. By the way, Daryl Prunty is asking, does the FCC allow cursing on the air? No, but we're not on the air. We're on the internet, and there are no such rules on the internet. I'm not on any terrestrial radio station, so I can curse my little heart out if I so choose, and there's nobody who can say anything. But if I was on a radio station with call letters of, you know, K or W, whatever, we couldn't because our rules are antiquated. Anyway, David, I'm going to run because I got to get ready for Lisa Graves, and I want to get some of this Biden stuff in.
Okay.
Okay.
Love you, Mallory. Bye.
Love you too. Bye. That's the husband, everybody. All right. So, I'll get into some of this stuff on the Voting Rights Act. It's not, you know, the For the People Act and the John Lewis Act. When Lisa Graves is here, I have so many things I want to talk to her about. So I keep watching the Zoom room. As soon as she's there, I'm going to bring her in and we'll go. But in the meantime, I'm going to play for you just a couple of clips from today. You know, if you want to watch it, it's there. You can see it. But Putin was everything you'd expect him to be. After their little almost 2-hour meeting, they did separate press conferences because Biden didn't want to repeat what happened in Helsinki. Not that he would, because he wouldn't be sucking Putin's dick like Trump did, but he didn't even want to be in the picture with him. He didn't want to give them the opportunity. But anyway, there was a reporter for ABC News. Let me see. I know I wrote her name down somewhere. Her name is Rachel V. Scott. Rachel V. Scott has the balls the Democrats are lacking. Here's what she asked Putin.
BBC News, our American colleagues.
Okay.
Mr. President, thank you so much for taking my question. President Biden has said that he would respond if cyber attacks from Russia do not stop. I'm curious, what did he tell you? Did he make any threats? And a quick follow-up, if I may, sir. The list of your political opponents who are dead, prisoned, or jailed is long. Alexei Navalny's organization calls for free and fair elections, an end to corruption. But Russia has outlawed that organization, calling it extremist. And you have now prevented anyone who supports him to run for office. So my question is, Mr. President, what are you so afraid of?
What are you afraid of?
Right. Well, once again, I would like to repeat what I said about so-called foreign agents.
Yeah, I'm not even going to play this answer because he doesn't answer the question. He's real big on the whataboutism. But I got to hand it to somebody I think we're going to be hearing a lot more of, Rachel V. Scott of ABC News, because she had already sat down and she asked for the microphone again to say this.
Yeah, microphone.
You didn't answer my question,
sir.
If all of your political opponents are dead, in prison, poison, doesn't that send a message that you do not want a fair political fight?
Well, yeah.
Well, on the question of who is murdering whom, people rioted and went into the Congress in the U.S. with political demands. And many people were declared as criminals, and they are threatened with imprisonment from 20 to 25 years.
What?
And these people were immediately arrested after those events.
No, they weren't immediately arrested. So this whataboutism just keeps going.
On what grounds, we don't know.
Yeah, we know exactly what grounds they were arrested on. The insurrectionists?
The state didn't actually inform us about that.
Bullshit.
One of the participants...
Okay, you know what? So you get the idea. He doesn't answer a question. He's doing the whataboutism stuff. There was one clip where he kept going on and on about all the question was about Joe Biden wants the dealing with the Russians to be reliable, to be not unpredictable. And he's like, unpredictable, want to talk about, and he starts reeling off all these things that Trump did, pulled us out of the nuclear deal, pulled us out of the armed force, the nuclear treaty with Russia, all the things that, all Trump things he's bringing up. It's whataboutism. He didn't answer a single question. Every time he was asked a direct question, he turned it around to what the United States is doing. All right. Joe Biden came out, did a much shorter presser than Putin did. And just as he was leaving, Biden has a tendency to do this. People were calling out questions. And CNN's Caitlin Collins shouted out a question. And Joe Biden turned around. You know what? I can actually play the video of this for you because it's kind of astounding. Joe Biden has a really short fuse, apparently. So here, let me share this with you. So this happened.
Are you confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
Yeah, I'm not confident he'll change his behavior. What do you do all the time? So when did I say I was confident?
You said in the next 6 months.
I said what I said was, let's get it straight. I said what will change their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
But given his past behavior has not changed, and in that press conference, after sitting down with you for several hours, he denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
You don't understand that, you're in the wrong business.
If you don't understand that, he said, you're in the wrong business, and he walks off. Joe, what up, Joe?
Come on, man.
Come on, man. You got a short fuse, Joe, huh? Well, I guess someone said that didn't look so good. So Joe came back and went up to the press gaggle outside of their plane as they're all getting ready to get on the plane and fly back home. And this happened. Here we go. Let me bring this one up again for you. He actually apologized. He did. Yeah. So this happened.
Caitlin's question that you answered at the very end there, that you came over to talk about, I think at the heart of it was this question of whether or not you seem overly optimistic, given that what we all listen to President Putin essentially say the same old things that he said forever. He's, you know, rejecting all responsibility for all that stuff. And I guess the question that he was trying to get, and maybe you could take another stab at it, is what concrete evidence do you have from these three plus hours that suggests that any movement has been made? And I don't know.
Now he's laughing.
No. But you're all
question.
Look, to be a good reporter, you got to be negative. You got to have a negative view of life. Okay, it seems to me the way you all
really
never ask a positive question.
Oh,
why,
my God,
in fact,
he's sounding like Trump.
Having agreement, we'll find out. We have an agreement to work on a major arms control agreement. I started working on arms control agreements back all the way during the Cold War. If we could do one in the Cold War, why couldn't we do one now? We'll see. We will see whether or not it happens. But what do you, I mean, the thing that always amazed me about the questions, and I apologize for having been short on this.
He apologizes for having been short.
If you were in my position, would you say, well, I don't think, man, anything's going to happen. It's going to be really rough. I think it's going to really be bad. You guarantee nothing happens. You guarantee nothing happens.
So there's a value.
You know, I think Joe Biden lacks a little bit of conviction. I don't know. I don't think he should have snapped at Caitlin Collins. I'm less than impressed with her these days. But I don't know. That was kind of a weird end to this trip for him to scold Caitlin Collins. You're in the wrong business if you don't know the answer to that. Really? And then to go back on the tarmac and then apologize. I guess it's better that he apologized. That's something the former guy would never do. All right. Anyway, I see our guest is here, and I'm always thrilled to welcome Lisa Graves to the show. Today is certainly no exception to that. Hey, Lisa Graves.
Hey, Nicole. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you for being here. You know, oh, hold on. My notes just covered you up, so I got to bring them over to the main screen. I'm having all kinds of technical things, and someone told me that because Mercury's in retrograde, the tech gods are screwing with me. So that's what's going on here. But let me tell you, Lisa Graves is the founder, executive director, and editor-in-chief of True North Research. You can find them at truenorthresearch.org. She spearheaded a bunch of major breakthrough investigations into those distorting American democracy and public policy, including CokeDocs.org, Alec Exposed, and a bunch of others. They all came through Lisa and Center for Media and Democracy, and now, of course, True North Research. But she also served time in the Justice Department. You were a Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Policy in the Department of Justice under Clinton. So that gave you, Lisa, some insight into the inner workings of the DOJ, did it not?
It did. I actually was a career deputy. And so I served both under Ms. Reno and Mr. Ashcroft.
Wait, say that again. You're breaking up on me a little bit.
Oh, sorry about that. I was a career deputy. And so I served under both Ms. Reno and Mr. Ashcroft.
Miss Reno and Mr. Ashcroft. Right. Boy, that's like one end of the spectrum to the other. Are you as shocked as I am seeing the revelations of the last few days of what happened in Trump's Justice Department, what he charged his attorney general with and others under him, the things that he had them do and that they apparently at least tried to do?
It is shocking. Oh, gosh, I've got such an echo here.
Do you? You know what?
Did I call back? Or?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to ask you on Zoom. Here, we're going to do this. We should have done off the air. You see on the bottom where it says the microphone icon?
Yep.
If you, and I just muted myself. If you click on the arrow there and it'll say select a microphone. Can you tell me what microphone it says you're on?
It says, it said built-in microphone.
Built-in, okay, that's what you should be on. Are there any other choices there?
Same as system.
Try same as system.
Hello, everyone.
Try same as system and see what that does.
All right. It seems like the echo has stopped though, right?
Did it? I don't hear the echo. It's
okay. Here we go. And thank you all for your patience, especially you, Nicole.
Okay.
So, to answer your question, I'm both shocked and not shocked, but I'm certainly horrified because we suspected that Trump was worse than Nixon.
Yeah.
And he was worse than Nixon, but more than that, he was surrounded by people who were worse than some of the people who surrounded Nixon. And so in the Nixon Justice Department, there were resignations before there were actions taken to try to fire Archibald Cox, who had been investigating Nixon. And in this instance, you have a number of people at the Justice Department who were willing to do the bidding of Donald Trump, referring cases for criminal investigation that were completely implausible and outrageous in terms of the claims about the election in Michigan. Also, you certainly had intervention by Trump from the microphone and behind the scenes on an array of criminal investigations, including investigations surrounding himself and his closest advisors. And then you had him basically sicking the Justice Department on two members of the House Intelligence Committee, right, that Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, men who have done nothing wrong, who were merely investigating this president for demonstrable evidence of the relationships between his closest allies, his closest advisors, and Russian agents. And under longstanding U.S. law, under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act specifically, which has been on the books for more than three decades now, when someone is in contact with an agent of a foreign power, meaning an agent of a foreign government,
right,
or someone who is working on behalf of a foreign-owned, a country-owned corporation, they're subject to surveillance under our system.
Sure. That's how FISA works, right?
Yeah. You had our House Intelligence Committee doing what it was supposed to do in terms of oversight of the intelligence in defense of America. And men on that committee and their staffs and families were subject to an electronic surveillance by Trump pursuing some sort of leaks investigation, but was really targeted at the men he had the greatest disdain for speaking out against Trump. And so you have the total wholesale politicization of the U.S. Department of Justice at very many different levels, including not just those departments, but also other components of the department, by a president who claimed to be an adherent of the rule of law, which I think meant only the rule of Trump, certainly not the rule of law by any recognizable, in any recognizable way. And you have a bunch of aiders and abettors in Congress who are willing to do anything to defend this man and the money that he is making for the party through his lucrative lie, or the big lie, as the Democrats call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, in my view, a wholesale corruption of a number of people on behalf of one of the most corrupt politicians to ever walk these shores in Donald Trump.
Right. And okay. So that all is a given. I mean, we see it. We're seeing the emails. We're seeing the memos. You hear Rudy Giuliani, oh my God, did exactly what Donald Trump did with the Ukrainians, but days later, in trying to get them to, you know, to say that they're opening an investigation into Joe Biden. They didn't actually want an investigation. They just wanted to say that there was an investigation because they thought it would reflect better on Donald Trump and hurt Joe Biden's chances in the election over here. Because everything was political with them. There was nothing, you know, they ostensibly said they're doing it to stamp out corruption. This bullshit. They were doing it to try to influence the election back here. And when Giuliani wasn't successful, it was just like, what, 3 or 4 days later that Donald Trump made that infamous phone call. Now we're seeing all the dominoes falling into place. If we had a legitimate Republican Party who cared more about the rule of law and the Constitution than their own jobs, how would they be reacting right now?
Well, it's really astonishing because, as you point out, the parallels between Rudy Giuliani's talking points and the talking points that were provided from the assistant to the president to the deputy attorney general are certainly in parallel. They're reading from the same script. That script is filled with lies.
Yep.
That script is filled with utterly implausible claims about the election. And as you point out, you also see Giuliani deploying these tactics to try to smear Joe Biden, to try to influence the election, distort the election. You know, that certainly can be described as politicization, it's political, but it's more than political. It's about power. And it's about maintaining power at any cost, at basically at any expense, at the expense of liberty, at the expense of the rule of law. And so, you know, it really is an extraordinary circumstance that we found ourselves in and are still in the midst of, because so many of these Republicans have refused to just act with common decency and protect and defend our democracy, defend our Constitution. Right. In fact, many of them take an oath to do so. Yes. And I think they've failed over and over again. And you see this sort of bootlicking or ass kissing would be another way of putting it, of people like Rick Scott, the former governor of Florida, who had his own issues in litigation before he became governor,
yeah,
with respect to HCA and his claims of, you know, lack of knowledge during the
pled the Fifth 75 times so as not to implicate himself in the biggest fraud on Medicare in our nation's history.
Yeah.
That's Rick Scott.
Yeah, astonishing. That man then becomes governor, then becomes senator, and is now the head of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, the NRSC. And they just now, this spring, invented a new award that never existed before for Trump for his supposed defense of freedom.
Yes, they did.
You know, so it's all sort of window dressing. It's all the sort of, one of my friends has a blog. It's like Digby's blog. And they talk about the madness of King George.
Yeah, right.
It really is an emperor has no clothes situation. And so many of these people who have been elected seem to be so attached to their own personal power that they're willing to betray our core values as a people and our core checks and balances in our Constitution. There's no doubt that there should be a full investigation of what happened January 6th and all of the people who were pushing toward what was on all intents, like an attempted coup to stop the counting of our election. There was a piece by a scholar about a month ago who talked about when September 11th happened, one of the things that George W. Bush said, among others, you know, was that he claimed that Al-Qaeda wanted to stop in targeting the Capitol with one of those planes. Al-Qaeda wanted to stop the very functioning of our government. And I think that was both true. And then there are ways in which it was more than that. And obviously devastating from the standpoint of lives lost. But here you had Americans who were unleashed to target the very functioning of our government, one of the core ceremonies of our government in terms of the counting of our votes for the highest office. And yet these Republicans, with few exceptions, are willing to turn a blind eye on an internal, a domestic attack on the functioning of our government. And our Constitution, you know, has an oath. It doesn't have a religious oath, but it has an oath, a sacred oath nonetheless, that members take and the president takes.
That's right.
To defend America and our Constitution from enemies domestic and foreign. And we are now faced with domestic enemies who wave a flag, but who have betrayed the core components of what it means to be living in a democracy, which is that we need free and fair elections where people are allowed to vote and have those votes counted and not disrupted by a violent mob.
Right. And now, I mean, and that's bad enough that they're, you know, they're sort of downplaying the severity of it to now it wasn't an insurrection. How dare you call it that? And some of them going as far as to say it was just a typical touristy day on the Hill. It's the gaslighting of America at what peril? I mean, they are undermining the legitimacy of our government by not standing up for the Constitution, defending it, which they do take an oath to. They're saying that all rules are gone. There's nothing. I mean, Congress is charged with oversight of the executive branch, but without any mechanism to enforce the oversight. So they can, you know, kick and scream, they can subpoena people, but Trump made it okay for people to just ignore subpoenas. He made it okay to say, you know what, impeachment, not a big deal. Not a big deal. Yeah. This guy was impeached twice. It is a big deal. But they're gaslighting us so much so you think, oh, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal, and our democracy is really hanging in the balance, isn't it? I'm not overstating it, am I?
No, you're not. It's true. Even though Trump is no longer in power, American democracy is not out of the woods, because right now in state after state, a number of these allies of Trump are continuing to peddle that big lie, the lie that there was systemic fraud in the election, that Donald Trump supposedly won, though he lost by literally millions of votes, and a veritable landslide in effect in terms of the electoral college vote. You have these members who have claimed their love for the police,
yeah,
who are willing to let hundreds and hundreds of police be assaulted,
yep,
and attacked by their followers with no consequence. And they are lying to the American people, including Ron Johnson, who is my senator. I'll just say in my personal capacity, I am appalled on a regular basis by the things he's claimed about that insurrection. To claim that these are just tourists, that this was just, kind of ordinary, peaceful people. Everyone can see what happened if they watch the video from that day. And in fact, those individuals were violently attacking police. But also, the other part that's astonishing to me is, again, you have members who have claimed to have such deference to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and law enforcement, the law and order. But we have hundreds of indictments now of people who are, who have their own websites and Twitter pages and Facebook, or Twitter tweets and Facebook pages, that are unfailingly devoted to Donald Trump.
Right.
These are not progressive plants. This is not Black Lives Matter wearing MAGA t-shirts. These are MAGA people. These are Trump's people. And they've been indicted for crimes on January 6th, including Oath Keepers. And others. So these are organized, many cases, organized groups of individuals who sought to violently disrupt the counting of the votes in our democracy. And they're being lauded as heroes or dismissed as tourists. And it's completely false. It's actually, it's contemptuous of truth and justice,
yeah,
for them to be portrayed that way. In fact, yesterday, I heard that in the hearing on the House side, one of these Republicans, Paul Gosar,
yes,
of Arizona, claimed that one of the protesters, one of the people who invaded the Capitol, who was trying to fling herself through a window and was killed,
right,
in the process,
was executed,
of trespassing,
right,
that these were federal assassins.
Right.
These people who were defending the members' lives from this violent crowd, a crowd that had weapons,
yep,
a crowd that had erected a noose, to yep, hang people, theoretically
out
on the Capitol.
Yep.
People who were using their flagpoles as weapons, as spears and as bats,
yep,
that these people are heroes. They're not heroes. They're people who violated the law severely in many instances, and who may be deeply misled, but willingly and gleefully so, believing things that are simply false, being spewed by this president, by Rudy Giuliani, by the people who were advancing these election fraud claims, that are now the subject of multi-million-dollar lawsuits by the voting system, one of the voting systems that has been maligned, Dominion.
Right.
And so you have a cabal of liars.
Right.
And unfortunately, an untold number of people who've been duped by the lies being perpetuated by the president, and also by people like Tucker Carlson.
Yep.
Who has continued to spew make false claims and sow racial division and mislead people, in my personal opinion.
Without a doubt. And, it's reprehensible, but because he's on cable, the FCC can't admonish him for, spreading falsehoods, lies under the moniker of news. You can't do that on an over-the-air television station, but on cable, they can, because there's no regulating body. By the way, these police-loving Republicans. Yesterday, the House of Representatives voted to award congressional gold medals to the officers who protected them on January 6th. It passed 406 to 21. 21 Republicans, Blue Lives Matter people, voted against honoring them. And it's the usual suspects. It's exactly who you'd expect. It's Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and that whole group. I'm not even going to dignify them with, saying their names, but just know they're all hypocrites and they're all liars. But the other thing that happened yesterday is the House Oversight Committee released this tranche of emails that we didn't know about before that reveal attempts by Trump's White House to pressure Justice Department officials to investigate the bullshit, the conspiracy theories about election fraud. One of them show Trump, his lawyers, and Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Mark Meadows sent an email asking the DOJ to investigate the claims that people in Italy were manipulating U.S. votes through satellites. Department, can you imagine if something like this came across your desk while you were at the DOJ? This is treasonous, isn't it?
Well, it's just crackpot nonsense that happens,
sedition,
to
at least.
Be, happens to also be really an effort to subvert the American democracy and our elections. And so it has both a crackpot component to it and, you know, potential criminal liability in terms of the effort to intervene in people exercising their fundamental civil rights, including the right to vote in America and have that vote be counted under civil rights laws. And to have it coming from not just some sort of really not credible guy like the MyPillow the former drug addict who got wealthy selling pillows. But to have it come from the White House itself, from the chief of staff, from the president, from the assistant to the president is really appalling in America to see that those sorts of claims being relayed as if they had any credibility whatsoever to the Justice Department and expecting the Justice Department to act upon it. But then seeing some right-wing members, some right-wing appointees or burrowed-in people at the Justice Department act on those completely ludicrous on their face claims. It's appalling.
It is appalling. And now, so Bill Barr, who showed that he bent over as far back as he could possibly go to help Donald Trump break the law, something was too far for him to go. So he leaves. And this other guy who comes in after him now apparently is, we're learning that even he said, I'm not going to do that. Like he threatened to quit if Trump pursued this. And it was all in trying to get the Justice Department, the acting attorney general, to continue with the big lie and try to overturn the fair and free election of the American people. Shouldn't that be prosecutorial? Shouldn't that be against the law?
I think that there may well be crimes that have been committed. I certainly think they should be investigated. I also think there's much more to be done to examine why the Defense Department held back in aiding the Capitol. There's certainly a substantial amount of circumstantial evidence that Trump was systematically replacing anyone who might oppose him at the Defense Department. We don't know all of the conversations that took place that afternoon. What we do know, for example, from Republican Governor Larry Hogan, who asked for permission to send in the National Guard from Maryland to help Steny Hoyer, at the request of Steny Hoyer, the House Whip, to help defend the Capitol, that there was more than an hour delay in getting permission to send those guards in to assist and back up the Capitol Police, who had lost some of those flanks as the insurrectionists, you know, surged forward and were invading the Capitol. And so there's more for America to learn. It's not ancient history. It's very recent history. And it really goes to, in my view, the question of, you know, what does our democracy look like in 2022 or 2024 if you have people who have not been held accountable for crimes or for other misconduct, for lies in the civil setting, you know, for the smearing of Dominion voting systems and other sorts of claims. Mm-hmm. If we cannot hold these individuals accountable and instead some of them are allowed to run again, for example, Donald Trump, even though he has been impeached by the House, I think, you know, I don't think American democracy would survive. Personally, I'm going to say this in my personal capacity. I don't think American democracy would survive a second Trump presidency because he would have no, even less accountability than he has now. Mm-hmm. And he has an absolute desire for power and the trappings of power and the ability to use the wealth of America to his own advantage to enrich himself. And he's someone who thought that he should have a third term, even though the Constitution expressly bars a third term.
That's right.
So I don't want a dictator for life. I don't care whether it's a Democrat or Republican or Green or progressive or independent or certainly not a libertarian.
Right.
But I don't think any sane American wants a dictator in, or someone with dictatorial tendencies in power. And, you know, Donald Trump has demonstrated over and over and over again that that's exactly who he is.
Without
someone
a doubt.
Who believes the rule of law is what he says, and that and nothing more.
Right. And now they are working, he and his minions, who are still in office. The Republicans in Congress are backing him up, and as are the state legislatures that are Republican controlled. They are doing their damnedest to now emulate what Arizona's been doing with this fraud it and do it in other states to enact legislation that would allow them to overturn their to not certify their state's elections. So if these things that they're trying to get in place now were in place in November and December, everything could be wholly different right now. They could have over, they came very close to totally screwing up our election, and they're trying to fix it so that they can next time. That's what scares me, and it seems like the Democrats aren't doing anything to prevent it. I mean, they're trying to pass this legislation, but then you got Joe Manchin, and oh my God, why can't they do anything?
Well, I think that there are ongoing efforts to try to get those measures through and to get additional measures through, like the John Lewis Act. We have a severe crisis in American voting where you have one party that's claiming they want fair voting, but it's obvious from every single thing
they
say
not.
And do that they're most interested in preserving their own power and minority rule over the will of the majority. And they don't care about independent election procedures. They're willing to destroy those in service of securing their own power. And that's
right.
A very dangerous place for America to be. I hope that people from all backgrounds, all political beliefs can, more and more people can wake up to that fact, because this American experiment isn't preordained to be permanent unless we protect our democracy from these people who are fundamentally hostile to the core components of our democracy and hold them accountable
for
their lies and for crimes.
And they're doing it at the highest levels too, because then we had Mitch McConnell this week admit that, you know what, if he gets back in power, if the Republicans take back control of the Senate, which is very plausible because it's tied right now, anything could happen in 2022. We've got a third of the Senate seats up for grabs. If he becomes a majority leader again, he will not put forth, he will never, ever confirm another Democratic president's Supreme Court picks. He said, if they take back control and a Supreme Court seat comes open in 2024, that he will not allow that to come to the floor. And then he even said in 2023, he wouldn't either. He basically admitted it. He said the quiet part out loud. Now, that should motivate everyone to get off their asses and do everything to make sure the Democrats keep control of the Senate. But it doesn't work that way.
Well, I also think it's certainly the case that there are Republicans who have, you know, like Mitt Romney and others who have, you know, shown some willingness to separate from the party, to recognize that this is a genuine crisis in our democracy. It's nonpartisan. It transcends party lines. And I think there need to be calls going in from Americans, calling and calling and calling and emailing, et cetera. People from, you know, Republicans and Democrats, and telling them this is not okay. This has to be addressed. We need sunshine in our democracy. Sunshine benefits everyone except for the billionaires like Charles Koch, who has unleashed his forces to try to stop that For the People Act. American democracy deserves, you know, fair voting that isn't subject to these sort of lies and repressive tactics. That's not the American way. It shouldn't be the American way. I mean, it certainly was during the Dred Scott era, but it's not an era we're proud of. And we need to repulse those efforts. And we, the people, regardless of party, should be expecting and demanding that our legislators protect our democracy and add more sunshine to it and add protections to the right to vote versus making it harder for Americans to vote and making it easier for billionaires and dark money groups and assorted liars to get away with distorting our democracy.
Right. But we've been screaming about this stuff for years, and it seems to just be worse. It's going down that rabbit hole and we have no control. And you could say, okay, well, let's take to the streets. Great. Now, if we take to the streets in many states, including Florida, the governor has signed a law that says if you're in the street protesting, a motorist can run you down and they have no civil responsibility. I guess they could be criminally prosecuted, but under DeSantis, they won't be. And you can't even sue them because they're civilly not liable anymore. In every respect, it seems like we're going off the rails. And we haven't even gotten to, Lisa, the Supreme Court decisions, where there's still like 19 or 20 to come down in the next 2 weeks. I don't think they're going to get through them. But I'm afraid. I don't recognize this country anymore.
Well, I'm hopeful that some of those rules will be struck down as unconstitutional, even though the courts have been so packed by Trump. He packed, you know, a quarter of the federal judiciary, but not all of it.
You know what? Hold on one second. We're going to lose the Progressive Voices Network. I'm going to say goodbye to them, but I want to keep you on for a few minutes because we're not done yet. All right. Okay. So bye, Progressive Voices. Come over to NicoleSandler.com and hear the rest of this. All right. Sorry, Lisa. So you think some of those new laws that they're popping up all over the country will be struck down? But so much of the judiciary has been appointed by Trump that a number of them are making rulings that are make you go, what? Some of them are doing the right thing. I think some people recognize this is their legacy and, you know, they're questioning, do they want to go down in history as aligned with Trump or do they want to do the right thing? That's the only thing that's making me think that maybe there's a slight chance we can come out of this on the other side. Okay. But I'm not very confident in that.
Well, you know, I haven't done a legal analysis of those anti-protest bills, the idea that they could waive liability for choosing to attack other people. I would certainly work, if anyone ever asked me, to try to challenge those on a constitutional basis in terms of the rights at stake. This idea that you can affirmatively attack someone who's doing nothing to you isn't consistent with longstanding U.S. law, either from a criminal standpoint for liability or from a civil standpoint in terms of liability. And so, you know, I'm hoping that some of those provisions will be struck. In terms of the voting rights issues also, I mean, I know there will be lawsuits challenging these provisions, and it unfortunately depends on which judges get the cases. And ultimately, those will make their way to the Supreme Court, which has been packed by Trump with the help of McConnell and yes. Leonard Leo. So, you know, it's not a certainty that actual, you know, that in my view, it's not a certainty that the Constitution's precedents will be sustained.
Right.
That is, they may certainly distort the law to try to continue to aid the Republican agenda that helped get them power in terms of this Supreme Court and Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. And certainly Clarence Thomas has indicated over and over again his willingness to bend the law to suit his personal agenda and also has engaged in a number of activities that I think have been, you know, very troubling in terms of his alliances with the billionaire Harlan Crowe, of traveling on his, you know, private yacht and things like that, using some sort of friend exemption for a guy he met after he became a judge who happens to be a billionaire. Like, so I think there's certainly corruption, in my view, that needs to be investigated by Congress of the Supreme Court. And there's also major reform that needs to be pursued because this court is grossly distorted and McConnell helped distort it. And he's willing to do more damage still as if he gets power again, as you point out, Nicole.
Oh, my God. By the way, John Doe in the YouTube chat room says, dude, Lisa, do you have a podcast? And I guess we should point her to him to TrueNorthResearch.org, not a podcast, but you do a lot of work there that they should be reading. And David's here, who you've spoken with before, and he's a question for you. All right, David.
Hi, Lisa. Hope you're doing
David,
great.
Hi, David. Hello.
I have a question for you, please. Do you agree with me, or do you agree with certain paranoid people who I happen to be married to and others who are occasionally on this program? I believe that in general... Again, in general, people don't work their ass off for the overwhelming majority of their lives to get themselves on the federal bench and or the Supreme Court and be there only to allow their, call it a legacy, to be subverted in order to be of service to Mitch McConnell and the rest of these ass wipes. They don't want to go down in history as the next Roger Taney Now, there are others that are, oh, no, once it gets in front of these Trump judges. Well, the judge in California who made this insane ruling about assault weapons, he wasn't a Trump judge. He was appointed by George W. Bush. So these people exist on the bench, but in general, would you agree that they don't want to make just bonehead, stupid decisions that will brand them, again, as the next Roger Taney?
Well, you know, I always hate to generalize, although I do appreciate your question. I think that there are certainly some people who were chosen for these positions because of their sort of ideological devotion to a pretty extreme agenda that's at odds with many current precedents of the U.S. Supreme Court interpreting our Constitution, and at odds with the views of, you know, a majority of Americans. Not all of them, though. I think some of them will be concerned about their legacy or their reputation. But in a way, because they're immune from that sort of accountability, because they have lifetime positions, it's only their conscience that, you know, that could arise this idea that they should be independent and fair, that could that they could take that oath seriously and actually evaluate these cases fairly. I'm concerned that some of these people who were chosen are so young and so ideologically inclined. And that's why they were chosen, because they're so young and so ideologically sort of predisposed to advance a particular agenda, that they won't rule fairly. In fact, I think they were chosen, in my view, with that very hope that they would not rule fairly. But some might. And, you know, certainly John Roberts, there's, you know, people have been talking about John Roberts as someone who is not as far to the right as I thought he was right, when I was working to try to keep him off the D.C. circuit back in 2002 and 2003, before he was on the Supreme Court. I think that, you know, that may be a concern of his. Does he want to be the Roger Taney or Roger Taney who issued that Dred Scott decision that pushed the United States into civil war or helped push it into civil war along with the secessionist traitors who denounced their American citizenship? I don't know whether John Roberts has very many allies in that position of trying to perhaps defend a legacy from being sort of the last Supreme Court before an American dictatorship took hold.
Well, that sounds like a definite maybe to me. And
it is.
And I'm sorry.
And I don't have a podcast, dear John Doe, but I am getting ready to launch a Substack through True North Research that hopefully will have some additional information. And I do have some videos that we're doing with wonderful thinkers like Nancy McLean through a project called
boldlythink.org. Right. She's so Democracy and Democracy and Chains. Is that Nancy?
Yeah. She's the author of Democracy and Chains. We did an interview with her to have her share her ideas about Koch and the Powell memo, whose anniversary is this year. And I'd love to come on again, Nicole, and talk with you and your listeners about that Powell memo and what's going on. But that's a very nice compliment from your audience member. Thank you so much. And obviously it's a joy to be on your show anytime and to get this this great question from your beloved.
You got it. Well, I so appreciate you coming on. You and you know they're singing your praises in the chat room too. We love you, Lisa Graves. You are you're my go-to. And I mean when Mitch McConnell said this, I'm like, "Oh my God, I wonder if Lisa's head is exploding." And then there are all these decisions that may start coming down tomorrow, so we've got a lot to talk about. So you're welcome back here anytime. I just try not to ask too often because I don't want to impose, because I know you're busy.
Oh, I'd be on anytime you ask, Nicole, just say the word. And thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
You got
it. Hello, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Lisa Graves, everybody. You're the best.